Welcome to the 29th Annual Executive War College brought to you by The Dark Report. This year's conference was in beautiful New Orleans, April 30th through May 1st. The title of this presentation is MOLDX and Z Identifier Codes, Why and How and the Future. The presenter is Gabriel Bienwillner, MD, PhD, Chief Medical Officer, Palmetto GBA, Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay, so, you know, as Lila covered with their opening talk here, there's a couple of things that we, in the lab industry, sometimes I think of as Scylla and Charybdis, that is payment and regulation, for those of you who are fans of Greek mythology. And so we'll have a couple of speakers that will enlighten us on both of those topics here, starting off with Dr. Bienwillner, who is currently at Palmetto, and hopefully will be joining us here on the podium in a moment to talk about Z-codes.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Please have a seat. Thank you, the coffee people out there, keeping me adequately caffeinated. So I'm the Chief Medical Officer of Palmetto GBA, or one of them, and I'm the Director of the MOLDX program. I will be talking about Z-codes, this big scary thing that half the community out there loves and half the community fears. And I hope that through some education, we can all love it, but we'll see. All right, I don't know how I have the ability to advance. I have not reviewed my slides, so let's go through this experiment together. All right, why do Z-codes exist? Why did the MOLDX program get created? I only have 25 minutes, so I can't go through the whole history here, but what I want to say is there's specific problems or issues with molecular diagnostic testing that required creative solutions to be, for payers to be able to manage these kinds of services. I do agree, those lights, man, they're bright. I'm gonna put on my sunglasses. Let's see here. All right, so one of the issues is that, molecular diagnostic testing, requires, here we go, how's that? These tests are complex. They're based on molecular genetics, and policy writers and people handling these services need to have some basic understanding of molecular genetics or sophisticated understanding of molecular genetics to be able to make good policy decisions and understand what services are being rendered. Another major issue is the coding system, and I don't want to spend too much time on the issues or deficiencies of the coding system, but in general, there's not well-defined billing codes, and that makes claims processing very different or difficult. Think about this from a payer perspective. The payer needs to understand what services were rendered so they can decide whether it's a covered service or it needs to be reimbursed. And the coding system has been developed over many years with many different concepts behind them that makes it difficult to understand exactly what was done or why. Additionally, the fact that most services in molecular diagnostics are lab-developed tests, which I don't believe is a problem in and of itself, results in many different services created for different intended uses that seem similar, and it's hard to understand whether any given service administered meets criteria for coverage, whether it's reasonable and necessary, or has medical necessity. Let me give you some examples of this. I'm going to throw out some CPT codes at you. I hope you guys don't mind, and those who are familiar with codes may understand what some of these are. Now, remember, the way the payers engage with providers is through the billing process. The provider says, I performed this service for this illness type on a claim, plus some other information, and the payer has to pay that if that makes sense. So what happens when a payer gets a claim that has CPT code 81408 on it? If you guys know what that code is, it's a tier 2 code. It means that you sequenced one of 17 different very large genes. It's not clear to the payer what gene was sequenced or why that's relevant to any given patient. So that creates a problem that they can't easily resolve by just looking at a claim. Another example is a more common cancer-related code, CPT 81445. This is a small targeted cancer panel NGS. That is a 5 to 50 gene test. Okay, well, which five genes? Are they the right five genes for this patient? How do I know? Has the lab demonstrated that they know how to do this complex service? Another example I want to throw out is 87632, which is a specific for a specific infectious disease etiology for respiratory viral pathogens. One lab bills 87632. You may understand what that is. That is a 6 to, I think, 11 infectious organism respiratory panel. And then another lab bills, performs the same service, but bills 87798 times 10 for the same ICD-10 code. What was done in that second case? So these are the kinds of weird things that payers have to try to decipher from your claims. So this gives you an indication of why something needed to be created to control some of these processes from the payer perspective. And what was created for Medicare was the MolDX program. This goes back to the year 2012 originally, and it was a program created to create payer controls in this space, to create policy, to do pricing, a whole host of things. It was created as a multi-jurisdictional agreement between four Medicare Administrative Contractors, or MACs. That's currently Palmetto GBA, that's Noridian, that's WPS, and CGS. Okay. Now, I will say that the issues that I've presented here are not only a problem for Medicare. In fact, all payers have these issues. But this is the way we approach things at Medicare, and part of the reason why we approached it this way is Medicare is kind of a program built on trust. It's a pay-and-chase kind of model. If we have to automate denials, or it's very difficult to really handle it, whereas private payers don't really have those problems. The program was established through a foundational policy, LCD L35025, which sets up the foundations of this program. And there's basically two requirements set in this policy. One is that a claim for a molecular diagnostic test, defined as a test within the molecular pathology code set, has to be billed with a unique identifier. Now, we use Z identifier codes for this process. And this allows us to automate an adjudication of claims because this unique identifier is tied to the specific test that was rendered, and we'll talk more a little about that process. And the second requirement is the test undergoes a technical assessment. The technical assessment determines whether that test meets policy criteria under Medicare to be reasonable and necessary. But you can extrapolate that in other instances to meet medical necessity requirements. We establish whether a test meets those requirements through the TA, or technical assessment, process. I'm going to quickly define what this means. These terms are very important. Everybody should understand them, and they're constantly being conflated, so I want to spend just a second here to review them. By the way, whoever's responsible to flag me down when I run out of time, let me know, because let me know where to look, too, because, okay, great, because they pay me by the word, so I'm going to stay up here and keep talking till I'm forced off the stage. All right, so the first thing, to be reasonable and necessary, to meet medical necessity, every service needs to meet three independent values. One is that the service must demonstrate analytical validity. What does that mean? That best described as, does this test do the thing that it claims to do? Does it do it with accuracy? This is typically measured by analytical validity studies. We separate that into analytical validations and clinical validations. That demonstrates the performance of the test in identifying that analyte that it seeks to measure. The second thing is clinical validity. Clinical validity is the association of that analyte that you're measuring to the disease or the clinical problem that you're trying to resolve. So what is the relevance of this analyte to the disease state or the risk of disease? That's done through clinical validity studies. And last but certainly not least is clinical utility. What is the clinical usefulness of the test? Can it change patient management to improve patient outcomes? These things are all independent. you can have a test that's very accurate that measures an analyte, and that analyte may not have any significant impact on management of disease or any impact in understanding of disease. You can have an analyte that has that's measured accurately and gives you a lot of interesting information about the disease, but it's not actionable. You won't actually use that information to benefit the patient. That would be a test that has analytical and clinical validity, but no clinical utility. All three of these things must be satisfied. All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about our product here that we have is this registry that was a central component of developing the MolDX program. This is a service for anybody who wants to bill Medicare in the MolDX jurisdictions that was created that allows you to go onto this website, register your entity, register your test, tell us everything that's relevant about that test. And when you do that, in return, you'll get a Z identifier. The Z identifier code will then go on your claim. That way, when you submit a claim with that Z identifier, we know exactly what you did. We know exactly why you did it. We understand things like intended uses. We understand the analytes measured because you're going to tell us all of that up front. So the kinds of information that we store in the registry are the test information like the name, who you are that's entitled to perform that service, the methodologies you used, the analytes you measure, the intended uses, the appropriate codes that should be used on that claim, ICD-10 codes that are associated, etc. Also price. So what this allows us to do is in an automated fashion, when a claim is submitted, that we know if that specific test is appropriate for that patient, that for that claim, whether that specific test does what it says it does, whether that specific test is of sufficient quality, whether it has demonstrated clinical value, and whether it's being billed appropriately as we expect it to be billed. You can see how this is a very different way to approach a problem than how commercial payers have traditionally handled these things. I do want to make one very specific clarification, and this comes up all the time. The MolDX program, as I've just defined it, was established explicitly for Medicare. And the MolDX program is a Medicare program. However, now, because this is such a useful way to handle these issues around these tests, we're rolling these kinds of things out into commercial plans. And when that happens, it's not the MolDX program. Okay, this is Palmetto GBA using the DEX registry that other people can then leverage for performing claims processing. All right, so how would you engage with the system? First, we have to create a process and a procedure for handling every distinct kind of test that has medical value. And that's done, and I'm not going to describe that process here. I don't have time to do it. But let's say you perform a test that has known to have medical value of some sort. You register. Do I have a little? All right, I don't. Yeah, look at that. I got a laser pointer. All right, so I'm just going to use this. Sorry, I'm going to do the one on the right. So what you would do is you would register your test. You complete that process. You have to satisfy the completion of that process so we understand what it is that you're doing. You'll then receive a Z code. That process takes about 2 weeks. We're going to then determine we do technical assessments in a risk-based way. More complex services get more scrutiny, whereas less complex processes get less scrutiny. This enables us to have a more efficient use of the technical assessment process. You may be required to add additional information for us to understand what you did and why you did it. So, for example, if you have a single analyte, you know, Sanger sequencing-based test, that we may not ask for any additional information from you. But if you're doing a next-gen sequencing test, we're going to ask for a whole host of information. We're going to want you to fill out some worksheets that talk about your analytical validity and your clinical validity and clinical utility. We may even ask you for your entire validation summary documentation from your laboratory. We'll perform that. That'll be the technical assessment according to procedures that we've established ahead of time. This process takes about 2 months. If the TA is successful, that information is all entered into the DEX registry. So anyone using the registry, whether it's Medicare, Medicare Advantage plans, or commercial plans, will understand that you successfully completed this process, you expect to bill the process, whether it's a good test, and what the intended uses are. If it's not successful, we'll tell you exactly why that is, which enables you to go back and submit more information. So there's no shutting the door. If you don't meet the expected criteria, we'll help guide you through this process. So let's take a step back and look at what the intent, what is the goal of rolling this out into commercial programs or Medicare Advantage plans? It's that we've got a good control on the payer side in Medicare to reduce fraud, waste, and abuse, while at the same time, we have the most progressive policies, paying for the most services, really of any payer. And we want to bring that mentality to the private space where private payers could be more permissive with their payment and what they cover, while at the same time reducing abusive billing practices and bad services. So how does this generally happen? Now, there's going to be many different flavors of how this actually works, but you guys can correct me if I say anything appropriate here, but generally what happens with claims processing in the commercial space is that labs will submit information to the payers via pre-authorization process that gets then typically reviewed in some way or manually reviewed. Am I already out of time?
Just about.
All right. That either gets approved or denied. That process can take a fair amount of time. And then if it's approved, the lab can then submit that claim formally, which can be approved or denied. We could effectively use these systems that we've created to entirely automate this process because we do all the work up front. If you go through this process up front, the pre-authorization could be, by utilization of this data set, be automated and instant. Similar with the claims processing. All right, so that's really all I wanted to say. Sorry, I want thank you for stopping me or walking up here.
Well, now you're a minute early, so you got.
Oh, there you go. All right, I'll stop there. Are there any questions? I'd love to answer them.
There is one question. It's a good one. I do wonder, though, if we should wait until, you know, the panel, we can get into, because it's one that has a lot of overlap. It's, you know, but would you accept FDA approval or New York State approval instead of MolDX review for clinical utility? But that probably is a good segue to our next speaker, so we can maybe wait for the panel to answer that one. So thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
I'll be back in a couple minutes.
This concludes the presentation. Please visit the Executive War College website for details on the 2025 event.